from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
And we are live from the campus of Illinois State University. This is the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND and WZND.com, the pulse of Redbird Nation. October 24th, it's homecoming week here at Illinois State. Pretty big week for all of us here in the studio. All the athletes here, we actually have a special guest from Redbird football. Starting center Drew Bones is going to open up the show. We'll be talking to Drew about how the season's been going and what to expect for the rest of the season. Then we'll be talking some ISU volleyball, basketball, and soccer. It's a busy season. We have about five sports going on at one time, so we got to try to talk about all of them. We'll be talking some volleyball, basketball, soccer. After that, we'll be joined by news and sports guest Sarah Feltes, and we'll be talking some U.S. women's national soccer, as the news, Alex Morgan is having a child broke today, so we're going to talk about what to expect in the Olympics from the team. And after that, we're closing out the show with the pick six. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Joey Dwyer here with you right now. I'm joined with Scott Rosala and fans. If you keep with us later in the show, we will be having a special edition homecoming giveaway. WZND Alumni Services and Jason's Deli have an opportunity for you to walk away with a special edition ISU homecoming package featuring a Redbird t-shirt, ISU spirit towel, a Jason's Deli gift card, and so much more. Stay with us because this is some free merchandise you do not want to miss out on. So fans, that'll be later in the show, but right now me and Scott are joined. Hector previewed a little bit. We've got starting center Drew Bones from ISU football with us right now. Drew, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. It's awesome to see this in action. It's pretty cool.
And Drew, this is your first time doing a radio show, right?
Yeah, this is. So everything's new here. The whole mic thing, the whole everything. It's pretty sweet. So
you're sounding good. Your voice has got you've got a lot of depth to it. Yeah, it sounds good.
That's good.
Just to start us off really quick. Obviously, huge week coming up for you guys. Homecoming. Huge fan support. The whole school rallies behind it. You guys are playing the Sycamores. What has preparation been like coming into the game? What's any changes coaches had you do, or is it just week to week, another week for you guys?
Yeah, it's just another week. You know, coaches don't want to change anything up, make it like seem like it's something huge, because really it's just another game. We got in, we practiced just like it was any other week, and now I think we're ready for the game. So.
And do you have, like, it's homecoming week. It's a big week. Do you have, like, your family coming up and stuff like that?
Yeah, my mom and my dad, they're coming up. They come up to every game, and I'll have some other people here supporting me, too, so it should be pretty fun.
And that's you mentioned that your mom and dad, we were talking a little bit before the show, your mom and dad come to every game, home game, most away games. Just as a two guys who, me and Scott, used to play sports, I know that means a lot. What can you what does it mean for you to have to know that you've got that support in the stands for you, especially on a week like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. My parents and I, we have good connections, so to know that they're there watching me every game, you know, I just know that I got to go out there and do my best, and it's for them up in the stands, so it's really great. So
you guys are coming off two big wins, improving your guys' record to 5-2. How do you guys feel you match up against Indiana State?
You know, they're a good team, like all teams in the Missouri Valley are. There's no weak opponents in here. But I think we've done a good game plan, and we got a good game plan going into it. So I think we got a really good shot here. So yeah.
And the offensive line in professional and college is not recognized as much as they should be. And I know, obviously a big name, James Robinson, is always talked about because of all the yards. But paving the way for James Robinson is you guys. And like, how much time and effort and things like that, and like, how much chemistry you guys have? Because you guys have been doing a great job in that offensive line. And like, how do you guys kind of prepare as a team? And like, what kind of gave you that, like, you know, chemistry to go on this year and be so successful?
Yeah, I know us as an offensive line personally, we're a really tight-knit group, so we always hang out together, we're always doing stuff together, we're watching film together all the time, we're doing everything together like that, so we're like really tight-knit group. And on top of that, it just progresses as the team goes on. So, like, when Brady comes and hangs out with us, you know, that's just more like that. When we're hanging out with James and stuff, too, we get really close together like that. And going off of the O-linemen, don't get any love, you know, we have we get shirts every year, O-line shirts. And
really?
One of the things that we get on there is O-W, or like, yeah, overworked, underappreciated. That's what, that's a saying right there. So, you know, that's kind of something that we rally behind and our coach rallies with us. So.
And you mentioned Brady a little bit, and I just wanted to touch on that. First couple games of the season, he didn't have the start that a lot of people were anticipating. But over the past couple weeks, he's really improved his game, and it's reflected a lot in how the offense has been able to perform. What's it like when you your quarterback starts the year kind of slow, but then it starts to rally? How does that affect the team atmosphere?
Yeah, you know, the beginning of the year, we knew that he was better than how he was playing. Everyone knew that, I think. You know, we were just waiting for him to get on a roll, and then we knew it was going to go. And then, I mean, like you said, once he did get on that roll, and like now how he's playing, like we know he's playing, and we know he can even play better. So, you know, it's good. He keeps the team up, and it's really good. So.
And you're a sophomore, so you're obviously, you're still living in a dorm, or are you in the Cardinal?
I'm a redshirt sophomore, so this is my first year out of the dorms now, so I'm not living in the dorms anymore, so that's good.
That's huge. That's huge.
The reason I ask is every time I go to the dining hall, we see all the athletes come in over at Shry, and you guys are eating. Like, if I could eat as much as you guys did, like, we're seeing the tater tots get thrown on there, all this stuff. What would be, like, your favorite go-to meal, whether it's before a game, just that week after practice? Because I'm sure you guys are burning so many calories in practice and stuff. You guys got to gain them back. What's like your favorite go-to meal to try?
Oh man, there's so many meals over there. Honestly though, try patty melts are one of the best things. So I could eat like three try patty melts just to, like, I mean, on top of other things, I could eat three try patty melts with some fries or tots or whatever they have. That's my best thing from there. So
there's nothing like a good try patty melt.
And what was it like kind of making the transition? Like, and to be honest, what kind of brought you to Illinois State? Because I'm sure there was other schools kind of looking at you. So what did make you kind of settle and you know, kind of pursue your career here at Illinois State?
So, there were other schools looking at me when I was being recruited. And really the main thing was I wanted to go to, like, a college town, like, feel. And other schools that I was looking at really didn't have it, and this place does. So that's one of the main things that brought me here. And on top of, like, that was the coaches and other things like that. But that was, like, one of the main things I wanted. I wanted to go to, like, a college town with, like, you know, a college feel, atmosphere to it. So that was one of the main things that brought me here. So.
And to switch a little bit, looking ahead at the rest of the season, after Indiana State, you guys have some undeniably tough opponents, UNI especially. Youngstown State's looking really good this year. But you guys are also hitting your stride in terms of play. So not to overlook Indiana State, but have you guys started to get ready for what's going to be this bulk section of the season where you're going to go out and hopefully prove yourselves and prove that out of all the FCS teams, like, you guys are one of the main powerhouses?
Yeah, you know, I don't think we've really started looking past there. I mean, I know everyone has it in the back of their mind, like, we got a tough schedule coming up. But what Coach Back had said is after we played North Dakota State, he just – you know, we're going to start a new season, so we're starting a new 7-game season at North Dakota State, and so that's what we're kind of looking for, one game after the next now. But I know we all have had it in the back of our heads, like, tough schedules coming up here. We really want to be all these teams the rest of the season, so I know that's been something that Coach Back's talked about.
In the last 63 games, you guys are 50-13 at home. I don't know if you know that stat. I know it's a little bit before your time as well. But
Before ours
as well. But how much does home field advantage really impact a game?
Oh, man, it helps so much. Just from the whole traveling aspect of away games, it just kind of sucks. I mean, they try and make it as easy as they can for you, but it just kind of sucks. So when you're at home and you have the advantage of sleeping in your own bed before the game and stuff like that, and you have the advantage of, you know, not traveling on a bus for 4 hours or something like that before the game, and you just have, like, the comfort of that, plus home fans, you know, you get – I mean, after the game, you know, you don't have to travel the long ride back home. Home field advantage is – it's really just amazing, so –
And you kind of bring up, like, travel and stuff. So just really quick, kind of, can you run us through, like, what it's like to travel for all the people out there listening that don't know what it's like to be a college athlete? I mean, do you guys get down there, like, a day before? What are the meals like in the hotel, stuff like that?
Yeah, so most of the games were down there a day before. Coach Back this year has tried to, you know, really make it so where he shortens the day for us, is what he calls it. So if we can make it in one trip, like to Northern Iowa, we made it in one trip that morning. You know, we were there. Then we came back that night. But for most of the games, we're there the day before. We're eating the hotel meals. Like, they usually have a hotel that can prepare food for us. So we get pretty good food, I'd say. I mean, it's not bad. And then so it's just like long bus rides. You stay in the hotel that night. You wake up the next morning. Coach Back likes us. It's a tradition. We travel with a suit and tie. So we're always wearing our suit and tie coats when we show up to the game and stuff like that because it's a business trip. So, yeah, traveling, it's like I said, it kind of sucks, but they make it the best they can for us. So.
And, Drew, we're going to have to let you go here in a second. But before we do, for everybody out there at home, Drew is from Overland Park, Kansas. Came in today repping the Chiefs hat.
Yeah.
I, on the show, every week at the end of the show, we've got a pick six. So we pick six games. One of the big contentious ones this week, Packers-Chiefs. And we were talking a little bit earlier. You're going with the Chiefs. What's your score prediction for that?
Oh, score prediction. I think it's going to be a close game. Hopefully the defense can hold it out. I'm going with Chiefs 24-21.
All right, and kind of touching on that, you gave us a prediction for that game. Can you give us a prediction for your game this Saturday?
Oh, for our game, no prediction. I'm just going Birds win. How about that?
I like that.
I like
Birds
that.
Win.
Yeah.
Birds
I'm
win.
Sure the listeners out there like that, too.
Well, Drew, thank you so much for joining us. Drew Bones, starting center for the ISU Redbirds. You can catch him and the rest of the team this Saturday in the homecoming game against the Indiana State Sycamores. You can catch all that action right here on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone, 6:15 on the campus of Illinois State University. Hector Carrion, Joey Dwyer, and Scott Rizzala on the mics. And what an interview there, Drew Bones. That was a fun one.
That's Drew Bones. That's I was excited. We've been trying to get somebody from the football team all year. Shout out to the SID for football, Mike Williams. He got us Drew. That was awesome. And that was a good interview, and I'm excited for Saturday. I don't know about you boys, but that's going to be a fun game.
Oh, I'm so excited, especially homecoming weekend. It's going to be a great game. And I like the bold prediction. He said he didn't give us a score. It was very professional, but he said, yeah. You know what? Birdies win, baby.
I like
and
that.
I'm all on board with that.
Yeah, you guys you guys put him on a spot a little bit right there. You asked him to tell you whether or not he was going to win or lose.
And he
that
said,
was a good answer.
Scotty asked whether he's going to win or lose, and he said, chirp, chirp.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Dan Moeller. What did Dan Moeller say when we talked to him about Trubisky?
Yeah, he was like, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah,
cautiously
it was such a great answer. And,
see, I wish I was that good. Someone asked me that question. I'm telling them straight up, we're winning 72-0.
Oh, 100%.
He's quick on his feet. I like that. But it's homecoming week. ISU football plays on Saturday. They're not the only team in action this weekend because volleyball, unfortunately, they do not get to be on campus for homecoming. They'll be on the road. They play SIU on Friday and Missouri State on Saturday. But after a big injury, we all know Kendall Myers' injury really, really affected the team. They went on. They lost a couple matches. But they've really found their footing. They've won four straight matches. So this Redbird team, they've kind of come back from that injury. They've found out what's going to work for them with the absence of Kendall Meyer. Steph Jankowicz was out last weekend, too. So they've adjusted, which is something you really like to see out of this young Redbird team.
And not only did they win four straight, two of those were against Drake and UNI. Very, very good schools in terms of volleyball. And then they had Loyola and obviously Valparaiso this last Saturday. But they have been playing very, very well, like Hector said, despite the loss. And looking ahead, Southern Illinois should not be a hard test for them. So hopefully they will come out of this weekend on a six-game tear, which would be very impressive after losing one of your star players.
And, you know, 13-7 obviously isn't the ideal start that they wanted to this campaign, obviously going 22-4 last season. But coming out here and being 13-7 with the wins that they've had, you know, that's not too bad, and they have a lot of potential to carry out and finish the rest of the season just as strong. Joey, I know you talked about Southern Illinois being kind of a easier opponent, but we do know how much home court advantage does matter, even for the Redbirds. So being at Southern Illinois does kind of take a toll on you, and you're still going to have to come out, and you're going to have to perform like we know they can.
Yeah, and really the struggles, you said it, Scott, the struggles for this volleyball team have really come on the road. They lost all three games in the preseason tournament and the Buckeye Invitational, out in Ohio State. Then a couple of their Valley losses have been all on the road. You know, the only home loss they have is against Marquette, and that was a preseason tournament as well. So this Redbird team loves playing at home, you said it, but they're on the road this weekend, And just looking back at last weekend, just talking about how well they've played, how well they've adjusted, they took on Loyola on Friday last week. Loyola was in first place in the Valley. The Redbirds handed Loyola their first loss of the season.
And you talked a little bit about the home court advantage. And I think what's going to be key for the Redbirds here on this road trip that they've got coming up is to get these younger players, because especially with the loss of Kendall Meyer, they're playing with a really young core. And so to get some of these younger players involved is going to be very important. Like you've seen Emi Ogagor step up in a huge way this season for the Birds, something we did not expect. Red Zone guest Katie Weimerskirch has been a very important part of the team in the second half of the early season so far. So I think getting these younger players acclimated and ready to face a tough away opponent, I think, is the big key for away success.
And you see two other big names, Sydney Holt and Emi Ogagor. They have been dominant in that middle on that on the wall there. They're sitting at number 3 and number 5 in the conference for kills. So that's really big, and they're going to have to keep that offense up, especially going on the road.
Yeah, Emi Ogagor, the freshman, I think it was last week or the week before, got her first conference accolade of her career. I believe she was either MVC Offensive Player of the Week or Newcomer of the Week. So Emi Ogagor already as a freshman racking up those accolades. But there's one person that we haven't brought up, and that's Sarah Kushner. Sarah Kushner, just a freshman. Sarah Kushner was starting for this Redbird volleyball team way back in those preseason tournaments, excuse me. She put on a show in the Redbird Classic, and she's been doing the exact same for the rest of the season. And that's the key. That's why this Redbird team, this Redbird volleyball team, is as good, if not better, than last year's team, just because of the youth and how effectively the youth is playing.
And you said how effectively they're playing. They're playing at such a high caliber. I'm just very excited to watch the rest of the season unfold. We've got about a month left until the Missouri Valley Tournament, and they are looking very primed to be in one of the top spots heading into that.
Yeah, just 5 home games left for this Redbird team. They have 2 more on the road this weekend. After that, they have the 5 at home, like I said, but then they also have 3 more on the road. So the season's winding down. It's the last stretch here. We're quickly approaching the end of the semester. We're quickly approaching MVC tournament play. So this is a big stretch for this Redbird team. This is where you need to really look at your team and say, all right, this is how good we are with our young girls in. And we have, Steph Jankiewicz coming off of an injury. Kendall Meyer should be back in time for the MVC tournament. So this Redbird team can keep up how they've been playing lately. I'd say things are looking pretty good for their hopes, not only in the MVC tournament, but past that into the NCAA tournament.
And this is the most important time, like you said, because they are sitting at 13-7, so they can't get into that NCAA tournament with an at-large. Just with the teams that they lost to this year, I just don't think that that's a possibility. So they are going to have to win out if they want a good spot. And the conference game or the season games matter just as much, because they're also, if they win out, it's going to make for a better seed. It's going to give them kind of a little bit of an easier schedule in the NCAA tournament as well. So these last couple games coming up here are very, very important.
Very important for the Redbird volleyball team. The Redbirds are in Carbondale on Friday, taking on the Salukis. First serve from Carbondale set for 6 p.m., and they'll be taking on the Missouri State Bears on Saturday. First serve from Springfield is set for 6 p.m. So the volleyball team on the road this weekend. We said it, the football team at home on Saturday. But last night, the Redbird men's basketball team opened up their, not regular season play, it was just an exhibition game, but they opened up their season at Redbird Arena on Doug Collins Court. They played Truman State. And this was really the first time that you've seen this group of guys together playing competitively on the floor, because it's a different team. Dan Muller said it last week, a lot of new faces. We don't know what to expect out of the Redbird basketball team yet.
No, we really don't. But one name that you do recognize from last year is Zach Copeland. And he had 18 points, shooting 6 for 13 yesterday. And that's something that you want to see. You want to see a veteran guy come back and kind of take the charge. But J.C. Hillsman had 12 points and 11 assists. And I think that that's very good. When you have these guys come in and kind of fill the void and the gaps that were left by the seniors last year in Keyshawn Evans, in Malik Yarbrough, that's something very big. And obviously it's an exhibition game, so there's a lot of season left. Everyone's a little rusty. But we're looking at some very, very powerful teams that we're going to see. And early on, we host Belmont, Little Rock, and UCF. And those are some pretty big names. But then you take a look at our season play, and we see TCU, and we're going to see a team in the likes of Cincinnati. So obviously, being a mid-major, our school really doesn't get a lot of love in the basketball schedule. But when you do get names like that, you're going to want to win early when the chemistry for all these teams aren't really there. I mean, this is the time to come out and get these wins. So at the end of the season, I mean, maybe there's a chance to net large.
And looking at some of these newer players on this team, one guy who really stands out to me as somebody who's going to be really excited to watch on the Redbirds is Dedrick Boyd. He was coming out of high school. He was a three-star recruit. He was the number four player in the entire state of Kentucky. He went to Eastern Kentucky, played a little bit there, didn't like it, came here. He had to sit out for his transfer requirements all last year. He had to sit out, and so he's finally seeing some playing time. He had 10 points in the game, and I know Dan Moeller is also really excited about this young player, but I think he's going to be a huge he's a smaller guard, but I think he's going to be a huge impact on this team.
Yeah, not only Dedrick Boyd, he did have himself a nice game last night. Zach Copeland did exactly what Redbird fans should expect Zach Copeland to do, just pretty much the lone face from last year's Redbird team that saw legitimate playing time, as well as Matt Chastain, who was unfortunately out with a broken hand last night. Matt Chastain, Taylor Berniga, and Ricky Torres, the three inactives for last night's game. Ricky Torres, one of the practice squad guys from last year, Joey, you said it. You talked about Dedrick Boyd. We've talked about J.C. Hillsman, but Ricky Torres and Keith Fisher III are two guys, in my opinion, people should be looking out for, because Keith Fisher III last year had to sit out due to the transfer rules, NCAA transfer rules, had to sit out. But Keith Fisher was voted a captain of the team by his teammates. I don't know if that happens very often. I can't imagine it happening very often where a practice squad guy gets voted a captain.
And that's something that Dan Moeller talked a lot about when we talked to him last week, is he said that although you lost the big three in Phil Fain, Malik Yarbrough, and Keyshawn Evans, he said there's still a lot of leadership on this team, and he said Keith Fisher is a big part of that. And that's something that can give Redbird fans a lot of hope coming into the season, knowing that, okay, maybe our star players from last year are gone, but we still have a lot of talent on this team, and more importantly, we have a lot of leadership inside the locker room. And that's where teams, like great teams, are made or broken, is how you can stick together through adversity, through leadership. And I think Keith Fisher, with some of the other guys, Zach Copeland, some of these older guys on this team, it's going to be a really good season if the Birds can figure out a way to win with this newer group of guys.
And I think we saw a lot of that last year, because we had so much talent and so much potential coming into the basketball season last year. And if you're an ISU fan, if you were a student last year and you saw the games, you were let down week in and week out just from kind of the performance, where a lot of games we should have won, we didn't. And looking at that, I think it's because of the chemistry in the locker room. I think we had a lot of players on that team that had a little bit too much just stuff going on outside of basketball, a couple of head cases. And when you have that and you have that chemistry disrupted in the locker room, and you got players thinking they're bigger than they actually are, I think it affects the play a lot. And when that happens, you're coming out there and you're trying to play, you're trying to win games, and it's hard to have a team come out and really battle. I mean, we called that game, we went and called Arch Madness, and we saw that Friday game against Drake, and they just looked depleted. I mean, they came out, they looked like they were ready to play, and it didn't work out, and we just got absolutely rumbled.
And that's what Coach said is the difference with this team, is they aren't like this big, like, head case superstar type team. These are just guys who are going to play for each other and play hard. And so it's going to be a very different look for the Birds this year, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, yeah, a lot of new faces, a lot of youth, and I think that's good, because we talked to Dan and Joey, you said it too. They have that core leadership already. They have those guys. They know who the leaders of the team are going to be already. It's just a matter of the team finding their identity, because it is a different team last year. Last year's team, going into the season, you knew what you were going to get. You knew what style of play you were going to get. You knew that offense was going to run through Malik Yarbrough, Phil Fain, and Keyshawn Evans. This year, you don't have that. This year, even being on Press Row last night on the broadcast for this basketball game, this is a pass-first team now. This team, they like to move the ball around. They like to shoot three. Last night, didn't have that good of a three-point shooting percentage, but even in the post-game press conference, Dan Moeller said he thinks that this team will be a very good team from beyond the arc, which kind of scares me, because if you look at last year's team, they had the talent to be able to win the game from shooting threes. they weren't able to do it. Last night, the Redbirds weren't able to do it in the first half. They did it in the second half, but I think they need to find their identity, and I don't think that a three-point shooting team is a good identity to have.
And I believe in Dan Muller. I think him coming in here and playing here and doing all this stuff, he's been around the block for a long time. He's brought us to so many conference championships. Although we haven't, you know, won them, we've been there. And so he has the experience. He knows what it takes to get there. Now I think this year we kind of put together a team that has a really good shot at winning it.
Yeah, so the Redbirds victorious last night over Truman State. Just an exhibition game, but the Redbirds came out on top 74-68. They'll play on Sunday. They'll have a closed scrimmage with Iowa. They'll be in Iowa City taking on the Hawkeye in a closed scrimmage. And after that, it's real basketball time. The Redbirds will take on Belmont on November 6th at 7 p.m. from Redbird Arena. We will unfortunately have to take a break. Come back for a newscast. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Keyshawn Evans from Illinois State Men's Basketball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, and a very big congratulations to Megan and Shannon for winning WZND's homecoming giveaway package. To all you listeners that did not get a chance to walk away with a prize, we will be doing another giveaway tomorrow during WZND's Flashback Friday. Another congratulations to Megan and Shannon for calling in to be today's lucky winner. If you have attempted but walked out empty-handed, we do expect your call tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. Fuse Countdown, right?
Flashback Friday.
Countdown's on the weekend.
That's on me. That's big.
Flashback Friday at noon. So be sure to be listening in to Flashback Friday starting at noon tomorrow. And don't miss your chance to win another prize package. And I'll say it, I may or may not know the winners. Scott was freaking out over there a little bit trying to write down the info. And he was like, dude, was that Megan and Shannon? And it turned out to be Megan and Shannon.
No, because they were laughing, and she's like, oh, this is Megan, and I just hear, and Shannon. I was like, okay.
Well, I mean, that's not against the rules, right?
No, absolutely.
As long as I don't win it. Whatever.
They have no affiliation.
Right. I hope they're going to enjoy the prize package. It's a nice package. We love giving things away here at WZND. If you miss this giveaway, Joey said it, tune in tomorrow for your chance at another giveaway, and tune in for the rest of the semester, the rest of the year, because we like to give things away. We like to give out free things. Who doesn't love getting free things? But enough with that. Let's get back down to business. Let's talk about sports. That's the reason people actually listen to us, or at least I hope they listen to us. But we have Sarah Feltes in the studio,
Hello.
The news and sports operations director. So our boss. She's our boss.
When you say it like that, it sounds like it's more official than it is, but, you know.
She's our boss.
She's
our boss, and we talked about it a little bit after the newscast. But, Sarah, you're in here to talk some U.S. women's soccer.
Yes.
Let's start with this, because I know Scott's going to love this.
Yes.
As soon as I saw the look, I was like, I know exactly where he's going.
I'll let you say it so it comes out of your mouth. But a big someone on the U.S. women's national team,
yes.
One of the biggest soccer players in the world, I guess, is having a kid.
Yeah, a very big someone is getting even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Morgan is 4 months pregnant. And
she's
due in April. And but congratulations to her. But you know what this means? Now that she's pregnant, she's not going to be competing in the 2020 Olympics.
Well, the Olympics start in late July, so it's going to be a very quick turnaround for Alex if she does decide to obviously play in Tokyo. You know, there's upsides and downsides to that. The downside is we're losing one of our best players. Alex Morgan was nominated for the FIFA Best Award as one of the top 11 players in the world. Obviously, name recognition, probably one of the most prominent female athletes in the entire world. But if there's any upside to potentially losing her for Tokyo, our team is stacked and there will be someone who's going to step up and take her place, whether it's, you know, a younger player like Mallory Pugh or, you know, one of the more veterans like Kristen Press, getting one of those forwards more time on the field and in a big tournament, obviously, like the Olympics.
And we've seen how hard it was for female athletes. I mean, taking a look at Serena Williams, after she had a child, it was very hard for her to bounce back. I've seen multiple interviews with her talking about it and how much of a struggle it really is, because it's such a big thing to have a child. So if we don't see Alex Morgan, like you said, Mallory Pugh, we didn't see a lot of her in the World Cup. Mm-mm. I believe she played maybe one match. Can it came at the end?
Yeah, I think she played in one of the later matches. I know in the game, I think it was against Chile, correct me if I'm wrong, the second game where they like blew it out of the water, like 13-1, something like that. She did get playing time. She's a young player who made her debut back in 2016, went with the team to Brazil. Obviously, you know, big heartbreak there where they went out in the semifinals, didn't place. Big surprise. Definitely a lot to look forward to this upcoming summer.
But when the loss of Alex Morgan, when you look through how deep this U.S. women's national team actually is at forward, it's not as daunting as you would think. I was just looking through some of the forwards we have. Kristen Press, you talked about Mallory Pugh. Tobin Heath, who had a very good World Cup. Obviously, Megan Rapinoe. Rapinoe, my apologies. So the women's national team is very deep. And so looking ahead to 2020, how do you think, obviously, this year we were the best in the world. Do you think that changes at all? Like in the scope of women's soccer worldwide, is there anyone else who can even challenge the U.S. at this point?
Well, I mean, first I would like to point out the fact that there's never been back-to-back winners in the World Cup and the Olympics as far as back, I think, in 1999 or even before that, when the Women's World Cup, you know, was founded, the team that won the World Cup has never gone on to win gold in the Olympics. So obviously the U.S. is going to look to change that. Back in 2015, won the World Cup, obviously did not make it, you know, to the medal rounds in Brazil. But something else that is worth noting is the U.S. women's national team coach Jill Ellis just retired this past month, so they will be having a new coach with them in Tokyo. It's rumored that they'll be announcing the new head coach this upcoming week, so definitely look out for that. But, you know, having a new coach, new dynamic, things are going to change a little bit in Tokyo. Jill Ellis, her whole thing was, you know, tweaking the squad, you know, whether it be from a 3-back to 5-back. But definitely seeing, you know, with a new coach, a mix of veteran players, but also, you know, young players as well, because we got a lot of young players on our team.
And a lot of people may think that a manager isn't important in soccer because you only get 3 subs. It's not like basketball where you're constantly taking people out, hockey where you're constantly having line changes. You only get 3 subs and it's a big field, so they're not constantly mm-hmm. yelling stuff out. But if you look at just managers in the past for the U.S., you look at the men's, our managers were some of the reasons that their play calling and who their starting lineup and people that they've had have caused the U.S. men's team a lot of struggle, and we missed the World Cup because of it. So I think that it is hard because you do have chemistry with a coach. So having a new coach is going to change some things. But when you kind of look at the players that we have coming back, I mean, you look at Julia Ertz, you look at Rose Lavelle. I mean, we have so many players and we have so many young players that are in their prime. So with the chemistry that they've had, I think that they're going to kind of bounce back and they're going to be just fine with that core, but it is going to be a change and it's something to kind of keep your eye on.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, the good thing about having a great manager, and the thing about great managers is, especially in soccer, is you need someone who's going to know your team, know your players, know which players to put in different situations. If it's a high stress game where you're going to need one of the more veteran players, you know, on attack, someone who's fast, who's going to push the ball forward, deep in the field. If it's, you know, more of a relaxed game, you know, someone who's maybe more spread out a little bit, you know your strengths, know your weaknesses, know which players to put in which situations. I have no doubt that no matter who the coach is going to be, our team is definitely going to excel. But, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to the future.
And we've been talking about really the future so far this entire segment, but the future for this U.S. women's soccer team isn't all that clear right now because the whole pay inequality thing. Do you maybe think that some of these women might say, if you're not going to give us the money we deserve, we're just not going to represent the United States.
Absolutely. And that was a big concern going into Rio after the 2015 World Cup is, were these players going to go on strike? Now, when that happened, they had been in the process of negotiating a new collective bargaining agreement. And for them, they have one in place right now. I think it goes until 2021 or 2022. So it still has a couple years left on it. So you're not going to see players sitting out. But the lawsuit definitely lingers over their head. You know, they are the best team in the world. There's no doubt on their playing talent and their abilities. Unfortunately, it looks like the Federation doesn't necessarily agree with them on certain things. It's not only necessarily equal pay as far as equal play goes. I know that's their motto. But it's just, you know, equitable treatment as far as, you know, getting the same facilities. The men's team gets chartered flights and, you know, meals for them on all of their trips. The women have to, you know, take commercial airlines, don't necessarily get that same treatment. So it's a lot of, you know, not necessarily entirely pay, although yes, equal pay is a big part of what their movement is for, but it's more than just the equal pay.
And Sarah, let me ask you a question. Obviously, me, Hector, and Joey, we're men, so we've all played men's sports and we've never really had this problem. But you being a female and being a female athlete, this obviously hits home for you. But the argument that they have is that all the female athletes should get paid the same as the men. And the only hard thing about that is when you look at the men, obviously they're not as good as the women in the world stage. It's just, it's a fact. Mm-hmm. It's so much more, there's just so many more men teams out there and the talent in Europe and stuff like that. But you kind of look at the men, the MLS in America does get high ratings. So that's why they're getting paid more. As great as these athletes are and as recognized as they are in the World Cup, when they're done with the World Cup, and it's as sad as this is because I really enjoy watching the Women's World Cup, but when they're done with the World Cup, we don't really hear of them because their league isn't very, it's not very popular. And it's hard, and I get that, and I understand that there's a lot going on with the planes and all that, but I feel like if you're getting a lot of money generated in, you're going to get more, and I get they're great, and I get they're probably one of the best, you know, teams in the U.S. I mean, they're constantly winning, they're proving that, but it's also a money thing. If they're not getting the money factored in, then it's hard to kind of dish out.
But you have to look at it from the standpoint of, over the past 5 years, the U.S. women's national team has drawn in, just talking like TV viewership and money from that, I think it's something crazy, like three times as much as the men have.
But you kind of have to factor in that the men didn't go to the World Cup.
And that's, yeah, that's exactly right. And but that's the thing. If the men aren't even going to the World Cup and the women are winning it, then why should they be getting paid less than?
And I agree with
and,
that.
And to speak to the point of the MLS, that should just be a testament to why these women should be paid more, because the men's team, they have opportunity outside of the national team to earn their salary playing soccer, whereas the women don't quite have the same, yeah, opportunity once this World Cup stage is over. Yeah, they're training for the Olympics. Yeah, they're training for the next World Cup, but the men are playing in Major League Soccer every year.
And that's a great point, but there's only 23 to 25 women on this U.S. national team. So they should get paid, yes, because they're getting the recognition, but the equal pay for all of them, I mean, if you're going to pay 25 girls that are on the team, don't you think that there should be a lot more being paid? So how do you do that? How do you just pay the women's national team and you don't pay all the other girls and all the other female athletes out there?
Well, something that I will bring up, and I don't know if you're quite familiar with this, but as far as pay goes within the national team, the men's team gets paid on a per diem basis. So they get paid each game, factor in, you know, if they win, if they lose, if a player is injured and they're out of the national team circuit for a couple months, then they won't get paid. Whereas the women are paid on a salary basis. So their salaries are coming out of the U.S. Soccer Federation and the National Women's Soccer League, which, you know, all these players like Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd are playing for, their NWSL salaries are coming from U.S. soccer, which also includes their bonuses for the U.S. women's team. So they're kind of playing for two teams at once, whereas in the men, they get paid from their club and they also get paid from the national team. So there's a lot of discrepancies on the pay structure there as well.
I think it's just going to take time. I think they're eventually going to get the money they deserve. The problem is, like, I think Scott, he nailed it. it's just not, it's not big enough yet. And I'd say soccer in general, men's and women's soccer, isn't big in the United. It's not big in the U.S.
And the sad thing is, I don't think it ever will be, because we have so many sports here that the European countries are going to dominate soccer forever, because that's their number one. Yes, they have rugby. Yes, they have cricket. But soccer is their number one. Soccer is like their, it's their football, their American football. That's how the ratings that they get. That's how big it is. And these kids are coming in from camps and academies from the time that they're 6, 7 years old. It's too hard to compete with that. And some of the Americans, the ones that are like Kristen Pulisic and some of these girls and all this stuff out here, they're good because they're going to Europe and playing across country while they're young kids and developing.
But I think you're looking at it from just a men's soccer perspective, because, yes, our men do not compete on the global stage, but our women do, and our women are fantastic on the global stage. And so that's where I think the difference is, to where the pay comes in, because the men aren't able to compete. Like, they didn't qualify for the World Cup in 2018, got bounced in 2014, got bounced in 2010. So, but the women won 2015, they won 2019. And so that's where the difference comes in.
And I'm not discrediting the women at all, but the women don't have an MLB, they don't have an NFL, they don't have an NHL.
But why?
So
why should that matter?
Men, all these male athletes.
But they do have women's leagues.
Sports.
There's the WNBA. There's the NWHL. Women's versions of these leagues.
And I think it's just going to take time, because you watch the WNBA. Like, these athletes are out there. They're putting in the same amount of work. If you even look at just here, the athletes here at Illinois State. If you look at women's basketball and men's basketball, they don't have different practice hours. They practice. The rules are the same in the NCAA. They get a certain amount of hours of practice. That's how much they're practicing. They're in the weight room for the same amount of time. They play the same amount of games. All the work, all the stuff you need to do to get to that level is the same. Men sometimes compete at a higher level than the women can. And that might not change, but the amount of work and the product that the women are putting out there is good. It's a good product. You watch the WNBA, you watch the Women's World Cup, you watch the women's leagues, you watch, I don't know what the exact name for the softball league, the professional softball league here is. They have one too. You watch, it's a good product. It's just not big enough yet.
Yeah.
And I think over time, that's going to change. Over time, they're going to start getting enough viewers where companies are going to be able to come to them and advertise with them, because that's where the money's coming from.
It's all from advertising.
But they need other countries to step in, because if you look at the Women's World Cup, they have 24 teams. You look at the men's, they have 32, and they're expanding to 48. So when you have more teams, that means more countries are watching. That means you're going to bring in more fans. And the World Cup for the men's, the whole viewing, like the population or whatever, was dropped dramatically when the United States weren't in it. So maybe we're not very good. We don't really compete to win at all with all these powerhouse countries, but we also bring a very big fan base. And obviously, if you look at the women's, if the women's team wasn't in it, I don't think there'd be a very big viewing for the women either. So the other countries, that's where it has to be big. It's big in the United States, but the other countries, it's not very big in women's soccer.
No, and I think that's where it struggles a lot, is because obviously, you know, lawsuit aside, the U.S. women's team is the best team in the world. There's no doubt about it. And even the next best teams, you know, your France's, your Germany, they're never going to be up to the level that the U.S. women's teams are, because you look at their men's teams. Germany won the World Cup in 2014. France won the World Cup just in 2018. But somebody I did want to point out is Norway. Now, I know Norway's men's team isn't necessarily like the greatest. They're probably at the same level as our men's team, but their women's team is up there as well. They've been in multiple World Cup finals, and they recently, within the past few years, the Norwegian Football Federation has agreed to pay their men's and women's team equal, but the men's team did have to take a pay cut for that to happen. So shout out to the Norway's men's team.
No, yeah, I think equal pay, there shouldn't be equal pay between the two teams. Equal pay shouldn't be a thing. The women should definitely be, it should be based off performance.
Yes.
If you're performing, if you're out there winning World Cups, you should be making millions of dollars. And that's all, that's...
But you got to generate it. You got to generate it.
Well,
And we can argue all day. You can't make money that you're not generating.
You can only do so much on the field.
The women's soccer team
though.
Generates more money than the men's soccer team does in the
true.
United States. But the problem is, and this is what makes it tricky,
yes.
but it doesn't happen worldwide.
That's why.
Because
it doesn't
just
happen
because
worldwide.
The men, because think about how many sales the men lost not making the World Cup, though. And they and the women, the Olympics is bigger for women's because it's, I think it's a, I believe it's a U21 for men, or like U20.
U23.
So, yeah, so the Olympics for men isn't as big because you're not getting the star players out there unless they're young, like their Neymar is in their prime. When
you do get like, exceptions, though, I know, for the men's team because Neymar played in the
but he
previous.
But he's been young. He was on
but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because all of these qualifications for the men's team, because they didn't make the World Cup and it's only U23 for the Olympics, like all of those qualifications don't matter at the end of the day because they aren't bringing as much money in as the women.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be an issue. I think it's going to take time. Over time, we will see changes. We unfortunately do have to take a quick break. Before we do, Sarah, what do you think this U.S. women's national team is going to do in the Olympics? Are we going for gold?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what happened last time, I don't want to say, is just a fluke. Obviously, Sweden's a very good team, but especially with the extensive depth we have on our team now, I think the loss in 2016 only bolstered us going forward. Going to have a stacked team, whether Alex Morgan is there or not. It'll be a quick turnaround for her if she does decide to come. Although I will say her Orlando City teammate, Sydney LaRue, had a baby earlier this year, came back 3 months to the day after the birth of her second child to finish out Orlando Pride's NWSL season. So it is possible. It is possible, but it's just kind of wait and see at this point.
We'll keep an eye out for the gold from the U.S. Women's National Team. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be closing out the show with a pick six. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. First game we're picking this week, week 8 picks, Eagles, Bills. Scott, who do you have?
I'm going to have to go with the Eagles here.
Okay, Sarah, who you're taking?
Fly, Eagles, fly, baby.
For me, it's got to be all Bills all day. They're looking like studs.
And I unfortunately forgot Steve's picks in the news and sports office, so I don't have them on me. But I'm taking the Bills in this one. I don't think the Eagles are good enough. I think the Bills are a legit team this year. They're going to take the dub. Scott, next game we have on the slate, Giants-Lions.
Speaking of Steve Cease, I'm going to have to go with his Lions here in game two.
Sarah.
I have to second that. I'm going to give Steve credit on this one and go with the Lions.
And Joey Dwyer, the amazing co-host he is, ran out of the studio into the news and sports office just to get me Steve's picks. We'll let Joey put his pick in now.
Oh, we're picking Giants-Lions, right? Yeah. A little out of breath. I'm going Lions all the way.
He's out of breath. We'll go back up to the first pick for Steve. Steve took the Eagles over the Bills. He's taking the Lions over the Giants. I'm taking the Lions over the Giants, too. Don't. It's the Lions. They're better than the Giants. Neither of them are good teams. Lions are better. Better of the two, though. After that, Bucks-Titans. This one's a tough one.
You know what? I'm gonna have to go with the Titans on this one.
Okay, Sarah.
I go with the Titans as well.
You know, the Bucs offense is looking a little explosive.
Ooh,
that's a hot take. Chris Godwin's looking good. We're all in a fantasy league. Scott's older brother Steve took Chris Godwin and is relishing in it right now. I'm going Bucs.
Steve's taking the Bucs. I'm taking the Bucs. Next game we have Jets Jags. Scotty.
I have to go with the Jaguars. Leonard Fournette has been running like a madman.
I've got the Jets.
Oh, that's tough. The Jets. We're going Jags all the way, baby.
Ooh, Steve's going Jags. I'm going Jets.
Ooh,
Le'Veon Bell, baby.
Okay.
Juice is showing out this week. Steve going Jags, though, so we don't know about that. Next game, Packers-Chiefs.
You know what? We're going to have to go with the Chiefs here. Mahomes, he was in practice today after his little injury, and I think he's going to come back, bounce back, and they're going to beat the Packers.
I think you're wrong. Obviously, going to have to go with my pack here.
I want you guys to know that I hate the Green Bay Packers with every fiber of my being.
Okay, Joey.
But I know what he's about to say.
But the Chiefs without Patty Mahomes do not beat the Packers, so we're going Packers.
Yeah, Steve's taking the Patty Mahomes-less Chiefs. I did it last week. I'm going to do it again. Go, Pat, go. Packers are beating the Chiefs. Last game on the slate, easiest game we pick every week, Chargers-Bears. Scott.
Listen, I've been watching Trubisky interviews. He looks like he's ready to go. He is tired of being the meme and the talk of town and the talk of the whole NFL. The Bears are going to bounce back, and they're going to win this game big, and Trubisky's going to have a very big game. Chicago Bears all the way.
Before I go and make my pick, I want to say we got to get that soundbite of Hector saying, go, Pat, go, playing on here for a bump. But I'm going to have to go with the Chargers for obvious reasons.
Yeah, that's a tough pick. The Chargers are legitimately bad. So even if I wasn't a Bears fan, I would still pick the Bears. But, you know, it's bear down all the way, baby.
Steve, taking the Chargers. Questionable pick there. I'm taking the Bears. No question about it. And that puts an end to our show. Unfortunately, another show has come and gone. Boys, I think we're down to like five. Time's winding down fast.
I think we are. Time's ticking. And Hector,
that's scary. I'm not ready. I'm not ready to say goodbye.
I'm not ready.
We're down to five. I'm not going to be here next week. Next week's show is going to be Scott and Joey. I'll be in CBI. I'll be down in St. Louis. Me and Sarah down at some professional conferences. You know, we're being professional next weekend. But Sarah, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely.
We had fun. It was a good time. Quick thank you to Redbird Football. Drew Bones, starting center for the Redbirds, took the time to come down here, talk with Scott and Joey. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go on to WZND.com. The podcast will be up. We'll have some video of Drew Bones' interview up as well. That's going to do it from the studios at 103.3 WZND. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.